Good morning, counsel. This is the case of Sonato versus Prasoski. As you can see, six members of the court are here in person. Justice Miller Lerman is on WebEx participating, and she is capable of asking questions. And
good morning, Judge Miller Lerman by WebEx. Thank you.
So she has full participation, and she obviously can hear and see and ask you questions, just like those of us here in the courtroom. Please keep your masks on, if at all possible, when you are not presenting today. But when you are arguing, we would like you to take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. With that, does anybody have any questions before we begin? Thank you very much, Mr. Sinek. Then good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Michael Sinek from Kearney. I'm here today representing the appellant, Dr. Robert Sonato. This is an original district court appeal. We filed a complaint for rescission of contract based on fraud in the inducement. We asked for equitable rescission and a remedy to be fashioned. The contract in this case required that an arbitrator be appointed. There was mandatory arbitration required, and the court appointed an arbitrator. We had an arbitrator hearing in April of 2018. The arbitrator denied the claim of my client, Dr. Sinal, and we filed a motion to vacate. A motion to vacate was overruled. The appellee then filed a motion to confirm the arbitration order. We objected to that. The court granted the confirmation of the arbitration award, and we appealed from that. What I'm asking the court to do today is to reverse that confirmation order. I think it was entered improperly for reasons I'm going to specify. I also would like the court to specifically order the district court to review the evidence that was offered at the hearing on the amended application to confirm the arbitration order. There was evidence received that was not reviewed. Also asking the court to vacate the order that was entered denying my motion to vacate the original arbitration order, and remand the case back to the district court with directions to order a rehearing, a new arbitration hearing, and to order the court to appoint a new arbitrator pursuant to 252604. This case sounded in equity. The scope of review, obviously, on legal matters is de novo. For factual issues, it's for clear error. The real error in the case, I believe, is a failure to do equity. Equity clearly requires that the decision be just, be fair, and encompasses right dealing. The problem with this case, and I'm going to quote an old song from one of my singers, favorite singers who pontificated on this and modified a little bit. But in this case, I think the appellee's got the gold mine and Sonato got the shaft, if you remember Jerry Reed. The problem with this case is that equity was required and equity was not done. I'm going to start specifically with what is listed as argument two in my brief and on the motion to vacate the arbitrator's order.
Is the failure of an arbitrator to do equity a ground for vacating an arbitration award?
In this case, I think it is. It's not specifically listed in the statute, though. The statute gives specific grounds where you can file a motion to vacate.
Right. So which statutory ground do you fit under?
That he exceeded his authority. And the reason he exceeded his authority is really just a straightforward pleading issue. We brought the case for rescission based on fraud in the inducement on the contract. There was an answer filed by the two defendants in the case. And in the answer, there were no affirmative defenses raised. They had that opportunity to plead defenses, but they didn't. The arbitrator had specified that when we did the arbitration case, because it was taken from district court and heard by the arbitrator, that we were going to use all the pleadings that were filed in district court, and those were going to govern the trial. And in fact, there was even a motion in the arbitration hearing to amend at the end of the evidence to conform to the evidence. In this case, there was no allegation ever made by the defendant that there that latches applied, that there was estoppel, that there was waiver, any of those equitable defenses. So we prepared our presentation accordingly. When we offered the evidence, we offered it without regard to those specific defenses that weren't raised. When the arbitrator received closing arguments in the case, he allowed us to submit written closings. For the first time, the appellees in the case raised these issues of estoppel, latches, and waiver. In my rebuttal argument to the arbitrator, I said, you can't do that. Those are outside the bounds of what we agreed to for pleadings. These affirmative defenses were not raised. But if you read the arbitrator's decision, and this is why I think he exceeded his authority, he based his decision largely on those three affirmative defenses that were not raised by the defendants in the case. There are a number of cases that you've issued that say if you don't raise something in your pleadings, it's waived.
You mentioned that there was a motion made at the end of the hearing to amend the pleadings to conform to the evidence. Was that granted?
It was granted for plaintiff. And the reason was because we'd alleged damages specifically in the complaint, and our evidence was a little different on the numbers on the damages. And so we amended to conform to the evidence on the numbers we presented for damages. That was really the extent of our amendment.
Is it your position that exceeded, the arbitrators exceeded their powers is just a synonym for committed legal error? What is the arbitrators exceeded their powers mean?
I didn't find any cases that specified that, but it seemed to me that that was the case here because the trial and the issues at trial are defined, the scope of the issues are defined by the pleadings. The pleadings in this case didn't include those issues of these affirmative equitable defenses.
Is there anything in the arbitration agreement that says this proceeding is going to be governed by Nebraska rules of pleading?
No, but it was pretty clear from the way that we did our pretrials with the arbitrator had formal pretrials in the case and specified that the pleadings were going to govern and he was going to run this case like a district court case, although we didn't use strict rules of evidence.
Could you please clarify your view as to the application of the federal arbitration law or the Nebraska uniform arbitration law and what you urged and what happened at the district court, which law was applied? Thank you.
Judge Marsh is the one who granted the or found that the case was subject to arbitration due to the contract provision that required binding arbitration. He looked at the federal act, but as I understand, he applied the Nebraska Uniform Arbitration Act. I don't think he found any conflict in the acts, but the pleadings that we did and the arguments we had were really under the Uniform Arbitration Act, the state act. And that authorized him to appoint an arbitrator. There was an objection by the defendant to the appointment of an arbitrator, even though the defendant's attorney had drafted that contract that required arbitration. The judge ordered arbitration and allowed us to submit names for arbitrators and then chose from among those names to appoint an arbitrator.
If the contract expressly used the language, quote, pursuant to the applicable arbitration laws of Nebraska, close quote.
You know, I think you're right, and that's probably why he did that.
So even if the Federal Arbitration Act may have governed in a technical sense, the actual arbitration agreement agreed to apply the arbitration laws of Nebraska, which would be the Uniform Arbitration Act. Right?
That's right, Judge.
So in this case, it really doesn't matter whether the federal act or the state act applies at the global level because within the contract, the parties agreed to apply the Nebraska Act.
Yeah, and we never did argue or suggest anything from the Federal Act. It was done under the Nebraska Act. But to further answer your question, the exceeding of authority was that the arbitrator went outside the scope of the pleadings, relied on defenses that weren't raised by the defense for the trial of the case. And basically for Dr. Sinatel, if we knew that the defense was going to argue at closing waiver or estoppel or latches, we would have presented our evidence differently. Judge Eisenhoff, one of my mentors, told me early on in my practice, if you're going to bring a case, look at the jury instructions and find out what evidence you have that's going to meet each of these requirements, and on your defenses, do the same thing. Well, in this case, they didn't raise the defenses of latches, waiver, or estoppel, so my evidence wasn't geared toward those things. And I did allege in my brief, if we knew those were going to be issues, there's other evidence we would have offered. That's why I think equity compels we have a new hearing in the case. First of all, I don't know if the defendant would be allowed to amend his pleadings to include those defenses, but if so, equity would require that we have a fair shot to defend against them because there is more evidence we would have offered. I think I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nelson, good morning to you.
Please the court. My name is Patrick Nelson. I represent Affilies Prusaski, Karen Prusaski, in her individual and personal representative capacity. I want to address a couple of matters that were raised in appellant's argument. The Nebraska Act applies here, and I don't recall the specific language in the contract, but I believe that the contract says that. The Nebraska Act is what the court below, and both the person Judge Eisenhower and Judge Marsh, has been applying. And so I don't want to make that any more of an issue than it is. The sole reason why the appellant wants the arbitrator's award to be vacated is, quote, the arbitrators exceeded their powers, unquote. I'm quoting from section 252613 of the Arbitration Act. However, that doesn't mean that if the arbitrator makes any mistake that somebody might claim is cause for vacation, that's the end of it. You have to have a new arbitration proceeding. Because in that same statute, it says, and I'm quoting here, the fact that the relief was such that it could not or would not be granted by a court of law or equity is not ground for vacating or refusing to confirm the award, unquote. That goes to the heart of arbitration, I think, in general. And I'm not here suggesting that I have 25 years of arbitration practice experience. I don't. But the research that I've conducted tells me that arbitration is a lot different than adjudication, which is what we do in courts usually. That's what courts are all about. And when you arbitrate through a case, you always assume a lot of risk that what you can do in court, if you adjudicate, is not what you get on the other end of an arbitration award, which is exactly what happened in this case.
The parties enter into this arbitration agreement voluntarily, or were they compelled to do so by the district court?
Voluntarily. The contract itself provides for arbitration. Now, the contract, believe it or not, was not in evidence prior to the very last hearing. At no time was the contract in evidence. It wasn't made part of the initial complaint. It just was not there. But it provides for arbitration.
And so it was the judge that discovered this and said, you folks need to arbitrate.
Yes. And it's kind of an odd duck procedure to get there because Dr. Prusaski passed away. His estate was commenced with a probate. And then there was a claim filed in the probate by Dr. Sinatle. And that claim was denied. And then Dr. Sinatle filed a complaint, which is one of the ways in which you can assert your claim when it's been denied. So the complaint then was filed in district court. Not the probate court, and it should have been filed in district court. Answers were filed, and then at some point in time, Dr. Sinatle decided he wanted to have arbitration, so he asked the district court to order arbitration, and the district court required. That's the procedure of how we got to where we were.
What's your understanding of what the arbitrators ceded their powers?
If the arbitrator is supposed to arbitrate a dispute involving this over here, and instead does something way off base, that's exceeding the powers.
Based on the arbitration agreement.
Based upon the arbitration agreement and what it is to be arbitrated. And in this case, the arbitrator didn't exceed any powers. The arbitrator just made a decision that the appellant, Sonato, does not like. And because of that, in my humble opinion, the arbitrator, it's claimed, exceeded his authority.
Isn't the heart of the arbitrator's decision that it's simply based on that evidence, couldn't put the parties back yes. in the position they were?
That is exactly what happened. And that is exactly what Judge Eisnagel said in his decision after the motion to vacate was heard. I don't mean to bore you with quotes, but he says, in reviewing the arbitrator's decision, this court does not find a substantial, if any, reliance upon by the arbitrator on the equitable defenses claimed to be asserted by the other side here. Essentially, the arbitrator found that he did not need to address the issue of fraud or misrepresentation because it was impossible, given the passage of time, the circumstances, to provide a remedy for a decision. Because both parties could not be placed back into the position where they were before the contract was entered into. At the end of the whole process, Sonato closed up shop, took all the equipment and records out, and left the office. And of course, by that time, Prusovsky had passed away. And so trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube, it doesn't work. And it didn't work then, and it doesn't work now. But that's the real, that's the crux of the matter. That's the crux of the matter. I do want to address the jurisdictional issue here, because Sonato claims to be appealing three separate orders. The order declining to vacate the arbitration award entered by Judge Eisnagel, the motion for new trial being overruled by Judge Marsh, and then the order confirming the arbitration award also entered by Judge Marsh.
You would agree, counsel, would you not, that those two orders that you're talking about are not expressly listed in Section 25-2620 as a type of order from which an appeal could be taken?
Yes.
Or should, must be taken?
Yes. Yeah. That particular statute has been addressed by this court and the Court of Appeals in a couple of cases, but the crux of the ruling is that that statute is not a list of the exclusive orders which may be appealed and should be appealed if you want to preserve your rights under the Arbitration Act. And what that means is that each order that's entered must be analyzed under the final order jurisprudence of this court and the Court of Appeals. If there's a special proceeding involved, and this is absolutely a special proceeding, and if the order from which an appeal may be made, like the vacation or declining to vacate the award, is an order which affects a substantial right, then it's an appealed order. And if it's not appealed in a timely fashion, the appeal is lost. And in this case, there are three types of orders that can be applied for to a district court: vacation, modification, and there's one more, and it's escaping my mind right now. But that's it. And that's the only way to protect your right to object to what the arbitrator did in his award. And if you don't do one of those three things, you're out. In this case, the only one of those three things, claims, was the application to vacate. That was it. And that was it. So once that is resolved, you're done.
If the court had vacated the arbitration order, the statute clearly would have made that appealable.
I believe so. I didn't look at the appeal statute.
Well, 25-2620 sub A 4.
Yes.
But where it is denied, then doesn't the matter proceed on to confirmation or not confirmation?
It does.
And then the statute provides that an order confirming or denying confirmation is appealable.
Yes.
So why shouldn't we treat, I'm having trouble seeing how an order denying vacation of an order affects a substantial right, given that the order denying vacation can be vindicated following an appeal from a confirmation or denial of confirmation.
Here's why. If the motion to vacate is denied, and this is in section 252613D, if the application to vacate is denied and no motion to modify or correct the award is pending, the court shall confirm the award. No discretion, it's shall. It's,
so then, after the court shall do that and does do that, why can't the appeal then vacate, vindicate the action that was taken denying
modification? I'm not going to suggest that that's not one of the possible ways to view this, but in that appeal statute, it also says that the judgment, which is the very end thing, like a judgment in a regular case, an action, can also be appealed. So you can appeal confirmation or denial of confirmation, and you can appeal the judgment that's based upon an order confirming.
So what if you have an order confirming an arbitration, how is that different from a judgment? You ever then have something
yes.
above and beyond that?
Yes, you do. Section 25-2615 covers that point.
Right.
And it says, upon the granting of an order confirming, now we've got other language, an award, a judgment or decree shall, once again, no discretion, shall be entered in conformity therewith and enforced as any other judgment or decree. So you have several different times under the appeal statute in the Arbitration Act when an appeal may be lodged. Do they all make sense if we were drafting this anew after we litigate a case like this? Well, maybe not, because, for example, I might draft it so that it's not the order confirming that would be appealable. It would be the end of the case, the judgment, because that's typically what we appeal is the end of the case, the judgment. But the statute says what it says.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 54 seconds.
54 seconds, Mr. Sinek.
The real basis for this appeal is a legal dispute, not a factual dispute. There's some factual clarifications that are really necessary because Dr. Prasosky contracted cancer. He quit practicing in July of 2013. He never went back to his practice. When this practice was sold, it was a practice without a dentist. The thought that his subsequent death somehow affected that, I think, is misleading to the court. Dr. Prasosky was never going back to practice because from the time that he sold the practice, it was not viable for him and he wasn't practicing. The legal issue and the real problem is the exceeding of authority. This referee, the arbitrator, never considered the fraud. And if you read all these pleadings, the defendant never once argued the fact that fraud existed. It's disgusting, really, what existed in the record on the fraud. But despite that fraud, there was no remedy ever given. To say that the fraud can exist and not be corrected is wrong. And if the referee had skipped over the determination of fraud and said, well, I'm going to enter a remedy, but I'm not going to discuss the fraud, we'd have the defendant complaining. I've used up my time, so that will conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That concludes arguments in this case. Thanks to everybody for abiding by our coronavirus guidelines or suggestions. Please keep your masks on as you leave the courtroom. Please leave the courtroom by the side door here and distance yourselves as much as possible. And the court then will go on to the next case of the day. And a cleaning crew comes in after you leave and before the next folks come in. So thank you very much.